WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Rick Springfield is one of the few performers to claim simultaneous careers as a teen rock star and soap opera star. While his stint on General Hospital only lasted a year and a half, his music career continued past his first hit, Jesse's Girl. But after his last album, Dow, he took a break from recording. Now he's back with his sixth album called Rock of Life. From the new album, here's Honeymoon in Beirut. I know this is your first album in about 3 years, so let me ask you why you took that long break from recording.
It was a necessary thing for my life. I just had to take some time. I was pretty burned out from touring and everything, and I just had to take some time off and just spend it with myself. I also had a son at that point, too, which was really pivotal in me taking the time off.
I'm interested in hearing more about your life. Now, I knew you grew up in Australia, and I think so many American musicians were influenced by the Beatles. Was there a kind of British invasion of Australia when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, completely. It was really worldwide. Although I loved the Beatles, bands like the Yardbirds and the Animals, I also, they were the songs that I used to do in bands. There was more, you know, I got the first band I was in were, the guys were a lot older than me. I was about 16, and they were like 25 and 26. And so they turned me on to a lot of blues stuff. At the time, the Stones were doing a lot of blues stuff, and it was when it was very hip to do the most obscure blues music you could discover. So I got a kind of an education at that point.
Now, I know you took a band that you were playing in to Vietnam to play for the troops there. What year was this?
68.
Why did you want to do that? Especially being Australian, you know, it's especially interesting to me.
Well, I was 17 at that point, and I hadn't really read a newspaper. It was music, you know, it was day and night, so I wasn't really aware of what was going on. I was just aware that there was a war, and basically, this guy came to me with the offer to go to Vietnam, and it was, for me, it was money and travel, you know, and I didn't really think of the war until I got there. And we were pretty much in the thick of it as far as a non-fighting unit can get. We were certainly we were under fire just about at least a couple of times a week.
Must have been quite an awakening.
Yeah, it was. It was really, I was, you know, the diary that I kept at the time was just filled with fear of dying the whole time.
After Vietnam, you returned to Australia. And I think you had a number one single there, yes?
Yeah, I joined a band, actually, that became real successful. I had, like, a couple of top 10 singles called Zoot.
Uh-huh. And you were the singer in the band?
No, actually, I was just a guitar player. But I left and had a solo single, and that's probably the one you're talking about.
So it was after that single that you came to America?
Yeah.
Now, what year is it?
1971.
Were you packaged when you came to America?
Yeah, I didn't realize at the time. I mean, you know, obviously I was young and, you know, young and cute and foreign, and so they stuck me in teen magazines, and I had never really seen a teen magazine until that point, so I just thought it was publicity.
What were some of the surprises of actually being interviewed for teen magazines?
I just couldn't quite understand the banality of some of the questions. I said, why would you want to ask me that? You know, it took a while for me really to catch on once I'd seen some of the magazines and saw, you know, basically what they were trying to do.
So did it catch on right away? You were supposed to become, a teen rock star or a teen idol. Did the magic work right away?
No, because I wasn't writing the music that they... I mean, I was writing, you know, my first album was a string-oriented ballad kind of album with songs about divorce and suicide and the kids would buy the magazine and then pick up the album and go, wait a minute, this can't be the same person.
So which was the record that first actually caught on?
Jesse's Girl would have been the first one that really had any success.
The lyrics of that are pretty interesting. It's about fantasizing making love to your best friend's girlfriend. Did that actually happen? Is that something that you...
Often.
Yeah. Does your friend know that it's him that the song's based on?
No, I don't see the guy anymore. I still have friends that are sure it was them, but...
Yeah, I could see how that would make things a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed, it ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I want to make her mine. And she's watching him with those eyes. And she's loving him with that body, I just know it. And he's holding her in his arms late at night. The charade.
Now, Jesse's Girl coincided with your run on General Hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you played Dr. Noah Drake. I'll confess I never saw General Hospital.
I confess I never did either.
As I was working while it was on. What kind of role was it?
Well, a suave doctor, you know, he spent more time in the sack than in the operating room was basically the attitude.
How come you auditioned for it?
I was broke, you know, and I hadn't worked. I was doing bit parts on TV since 1976, and it was, you know, paying the light bill, but it wasn't really getting anywhere. And I at that point that I auditioned for that and also got the contract with the recording deal with RCA, I hadn't worked in like 9 months.
Had you watched soap operas before? Did you understand their appeal?
No, I still don't.
I think a lot of people, when the album with Jesse's Girl came out, thought that you were a soap opera star trying to break into music, when actually you'd been playing music all along and had just started breaking into acting. Did that bother you when people had that wrong impression?
Oh, just a little. Yeah, it did. You know, I'm still it's still there for a lot of people, you know. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize. But, you know, I mean, it worked out the way it worked out. I'm sure not mad about the way it worked out.
Now, you've just come back to music after a 3-year absence. When a lot of your fans are teenagers, as I think a lot of your fans are, 3 years is a really long period of time. It's a difference between 15 and 18, or 18 and 21, 17 and 20. And I think for a lot of younger people, when they get 3 years older, they want to be like more mature than they were 3 years ago, and they'll sometimes deny the taste that they had 3 years ago and think that they've outgrown music that they used to like. Do you think that that's happened to some of your listeners?
I don't know. I really don't know what the audiences will certainly know when we go out on tour this summer. But for me, my music's changed a lot. I'm lyrically, it's about a lot different things than I was writing about in 1980, and I can't guide people to the music or say, you know, who's going to like the music. It's really, it's a totally open thing.
Rick Springfield spoke with us from the NPR Bureau in Los Angeles. His new album is called Rock of Life.
Waking up blind with a house on fire.
This is Fresh Air.